Welcome to another episode of The Working Title, hosted by PJ Harries.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Working Title. Hi guys, hope you're all well. Hope you all enjoyed the last episode with Glenn Alman in SA. That was a really good one, really interesting. I love speaking to ex-Boatnecks and ex-military service personnel anyway, but especially when they're doing such incredible things and great causes. So thanks again for him for coming on, and hope you guys enjoyed it. So this one is probably my most challenging podcast to date. It's challenging not necessarily for emotional reasons or anything like that, although that does get indicated quite a lot during this episode, and you'll be able to see why when we get into it. But the most sort of difficult thing about it was the logistics behind it. So, as the title suggests, this episode is the best and worst things about the Corps, the Royal Marines, but in the own words of serving past and present Royal Marine Commandos. So to do this, I reached out to every single Royal Marine I've ever had any connection to. So that ranges from knowing before I joined the Corps, so people that inspired me to join the Corps and had stories from previous years, all the way through to people that I met during my service, people that I just knew of when I was in the Marines myself, through to people that I'd met post the Corps that also were in the Corps, whether at the same time or different times, and even people on Instagram that I follow out of loyalty to the Corps. There's a lot of people in the Marines or were in the Marines that have businesses or different organisations, different platforms on social media that, as a community of Royal Marines and previous serving Royal Marines, we all try to sort of help each other out by following and sharing their stuff and buying products from them. Just part of that sort of continued community thing. So some of those I didn't know, don't know, but know they're Royal Marines or were Royal Marines and have businesses and things like that. So I reached out to a massive range of people, range of ages, range of cultures, range of everything. The one thing in common was they were all Royal Marines at one time. Now, the idea behind spreading out as far as I could with that was to really get the best information that I could for you guys, the listeners of this podcast. So what I realized is that, especially now, there's lots of information about the Royal Marines online. There's lots of TV shows, there's lots of films, there's lots of documentaries, some better than others. But what I have noticed is the key message about them all is every single one has either an agenda or it doesn't come from the words of the lads. So most of the ones that you see have an agenda, which is to either entice people to join or explain a certain situation, or whether that be Afghan or Iraq, and then it's featured Royal Marines in it. And then the ones that don't seem to have an agenda come at it from a different point of view. So for these ones, I'm thinking more of, you know, the work by Chris Terrell. There's no agenda there. It's to provide information, and they're incredible things, but they're not portrayed in the words of the lads. It's portrayed in a filmmaker's perspective and very well done, but not really the stories of specific lads, if that makes sense. So the idea behind this episode, guys, is to give you the best and worst bits of the Royal Marines in the words of Royal Marines, so that it gives you a real on-the-ground perspective of what happened, what does happen, what happens today, and what doesn't happen. The good and the bad bits, guys. So I was very, very keen to get balance. I didn't want this to be a massive drip session. A drip is a negative, by the way. So I didn't want it to be just loads of bad stories of what happened, what went wrong, and why it's crap. And on the same side, I didn't want it to be an all singing, all praising, you know, join the Royal Marines, it's the best thing in the world. I wanted to get that real life ups and downs of the Corps, you know. And I really just wanted to give the perspective of each lad serving and their own personal view on what's good and what's bad. So I reached out to a bunch. I wanted to get as many sound recordings as I can so that you guys aren't always listening to my lovely Essex accent. But I also wanted to give people the opportunity that if they didn't want to say it out loud, they could write it down and I'll read it out word for word or as close to as possible. So that's what I did. This episode will be a mixture of sound recordings and me reciting other people's stories. So please bear with it, guys. Obviously, the stories that I recite and I say may not be as eloquent and as driven and as well presented when I do it word for word as the guys that actually send it over to me. So when those guys are listening, apologies if it doesn't come off the way that you fully intend it to do, or it's not quite as eloquent as you would have hoped. That's probably on me, not on your writing. But just bear that in mind, guys. The ones that I read out will come from their words, but me trying to express it. So, you know, just take it for what it is. Don't try and look into it too much. And then on the same side with the voice recordings, guys, please bear with them. Obviously, the quality on this podcast is never as pro as it could be because, you know, it's just me and my little mic. But I try and do the best I can. And some of the recordings aren't as good as others. Some are recorded while they're driving cars or sitting in cars, rather. And some are on iPhones, some are on headphones. You know, it's just a big mixture. Some are just on telephone recordings, that kind of thing. So please bear with the quality in some of them because it's definitely worth it. So here we go, guys. The profs and dips of the core. Another thing I ask guys is that a lot of these stories, so I asked these guys whether they wanted to remain anonymous or to give them a shout out. Now what I noticed is there's a few people that were happy, yeah, say my name, not bothered, whatever, is what it is. And there's a few accents in there that people even introduce themselves or their accent is pretty obvious who it is. But I decided that the best thing to do was to not mention any names myself. All right, guys. So the guys that are happy for me to say their name, apologize in advance because I haven't mentioned your name and I won't mention your name in this. It's just so that I do a blanket cover. If I don't mention anyone's name, I'm not going to slip up and say someone's name who didn't want to be said or, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just going to put it out there, guys. I'm going to whack out all the different stories from the anonymous people. And then if in their own voice recordings, they say their own name or in the story itself, they say me, I was from here, from there, and you get an idea of who it is, then you probably know. But I'm going to avoid saying any names, guys, just so blanket coverage. So I've nearly talked for 10 minutes already and we haven't got into any stories yet, any dits. And I'll whack mine in on the end if we've got time, because most of mine have been said in previous podcasts. But here we go, guys. I'm going to try and alternate it up, get a couple of voice recording, and a couple of speaking me word for word. So here we go, guys. The first prof and dip of the Royal Marines from the words of the Royal Marines.
Okay, so I've been asked to do some highs and lows of my career. I did just over 12 years in the Royal Marines, mainly at 4-5 Commando. Did 3 tours of Afghan, tour of Northern Ireland, and various exercises. So I'm going to do 2 highs and 2 lows throughout my career. I'll try and make them as varied as possible. So my first high, I'm going to say, was quite early on in my career. We'd just done a tour of Northern Ireland and then we went on an exercise Black Horse in America. It was, from memory, I think it was 6 weeks in the desert. And then during that time, we were going out in Palm Springs and things like that. The desert was in 29 Palms. And then we got a long weekend in Vegas, followed by what was meant to be a mountain exercise, but we ended up doing a novice course due to the snow. And then we got 10 days off to go wherever we wanted. So a group of us went to San Francisco. So I would say that's quite high in the core. It was one of the only kind of long exercise trips I did, one of two, due to the busy period of when I was in with Afghanistan. But that was a high. Good time with the lads, good training exercise, all good. Another high I would go with was my unit did a selection to see who wanted to go and do a 50-mile race in the Falkland Islands. And it was a hard selection course. It was about 3 weeks, and I got picked to go on the team at the end of it. Went over to the Falklands for about 3 weeks, and we went over there to compete against all different services from across the world. My six-man team won it, which is fantastic. So I'd say that was another high. Lows, I'll do two varied ones. So my first low, I would say, was just the monotony of being on camp. When there wasn't a lot going on in between, camp isn't as fun as what you think. There's a lot of standing around, there's a lot of waiting around, there's a hurry up and wait, all that stuff that I struggled with at the time. I would say I struggled when on camp, so I would put that as a low. I was more of a field soldier. And the second low, I would say, was my second tour of Afghanistan. Bit of a dark day of losing three guys from our company, one of which was the man that actually got me to join the Royal Marines, John Henry Manuel. So I would say that was my biggest low in the Corps that day, and having to deal with some of the aftermath of that. There's two highs and two lows from kind of a 12, 13 year career in the Royal Marines.
Awesome, guys. Thank you very much for that. That was the first one. So that gave you a great sort of first look into how this is going to work today and what we're looking at. So I'm not going to bore him too much on that one. I think he explained everything pretty well. And make sure you keep an eye out for that voice. As I say, he was one of the guys that was quite happy for me to share it. But he's going to, I believe he's releasing his own podcast soon. So as soon as that's out, I'll get you all forwarded onto that. And keep an eye and ear out for that voice in the future. Awesome. So next one we'll do, guys, we'll roll through someone else's, another person's dip. But this one I'll read out for him. So I'm going to read this out best I can, word for word, from the notes that I've got, guys. And then add any points I've got to it, and then we'll roll straight into the next one. I believe the best time I had in the Corps was during training at Limpston. We had a very good training team who taught me a lot about skills and drills of the Royal Marines and about life in general. I was quite a socially anxious and paranoid person with little confidence. They broke the troop down physically and mentally to their core and built us back up again from the remains. I learned so much about myself and the kind of person I wanted to be, having broken away from the person that I was before. Being immersed in the core, their traditions and history gives everyone who passes through CTCRM a passion for something bigger than ourselves, and really creates a family of people you could never normally interact with in Civvy Street. Once I realised I was part of something bigger and I managed to get through the rigorous and turmoil of training, my confidence grew and I began to immerse myself in any challenge rather than shying away from it like I used to. Once you are through training and go to a unit, that passion starts to go. Unfortunately, I passed out a week after the final Afghan tour. The Corps went back to doing exercises ready for the next battle. Although I still enjoyed the camaraderie, a lot of the work in the Corps was repetitive, and many of the exercises that we went on felt like box-ticking events. I stopped learning and started coasting. In the 2 years I spent in the Corps, I went to America, the Mediterranean, did some counter-piracy, and went to Norway. Each of them were fascinating experiences, and had I spent more time in the Corps, I would have specialised, which would have kept my passion alive, but Norway was my worst time in the Corps. There was little training on how to ski, especially over long distances, and we were expected immediately to ski with over 50 kg in a Bergen on our backs and a ski trailer. After falling over hundreds of times, I wondered what training benefit we were gaining from it. It just seemed like it was a grizz from start to finish, and that was all it was. After Norway, I quickly realised that if I stayed in the Corps, I would be doing a repeat of those 2 years over and over. In part, I'm glad I had such a terrible time in Norway, as it gave me the push to move away from the core and try the next challenge. Although the core, after training, was not what I expected it to be, joining gave me the confidence and knowledge to be able to achieve what I thought was possible. Awesome, guys. So that one's quite an interesting one, and he made reference to only 2 years in the core. Not going to highlight that too much, but he's still in some sort of serving capacity, which is why he stayed anonymous. So that sort of gives you an aspect of why his time was so short. So people that know will know one of the limited avenues, what that means. Or he could have gone, you know, into a different branch, but he's still serving. But that gives you a good insight into what it was like for him. So for him, it was more of a personal journey, relatively short and sharp, and he moved on to bigger and better things. But he thanks the core for giving him the skills and knowledge and experiences to be able to push himself, to be able to do different tasks. So awesome. Awesome, guys. Let's go into our next recording.
All right, lads, my name's Dan. I've been asked to give you an account of some of the best and worst times I've had in the core. Yep, that's an Aussie accent you hear. I'm one of them dirty Aussies that tried to escape the convict colony and steal one of your billets. But here's what it is. Anyway, so you start with the worst times in the core, since everybody loves a drip sesh. So probably my worst time in the core, one of my darkest days, was when I was on ship. You know, I'm being on ship shit enough, you know, surrounded by Matlows, you know, 24 hours a day, all day. And then just to top it all off, we had the world's shittest boss. Like, this bloke was King Elsinore. Like, he would set, I don't know how he did it, but he managed to set new records on how to be a toilet. If there was a shit idea that some crackhead had thought up, this captain of the Bright Ideas Club would do it full blown. And it's like his entire goal while we were out was just to ruin the lad's morale, just take a giant steaming shit on any morale that ever popped up. So yeah, that was pretty shit. But what made it really shit for this 1 month in particular was when we finally got to shore, you know, after being out at sea for a while. So we finally got ashore, you know, just need to cut loose, something chronic. So we get ashore and, you know, just lost the plot. Just got royally shit in Africa. Anyways, just blackout drunk. Anyways, ended up at this whorehouse, as you do, with the lads. But like Lord of War style African hookers. And so end up smashing this one. Came to, realized I had no Johnny on. And, you know, when I came to it at the time, didn't really bother me. But then as I'm stumbling back to the ship, I have no idea how I found the ship. I had no idea what it was. But I did find this ship somehow. Managed to stumble my way back to the port. And, yeah, and I was like, oh, shit. Like, I'm going to die. I've got AIDS. So I've just smashed this Namibian hooker with no Johnny on in the middle of Africa. It's like, I'm dead. So I went to the dock as soon as he woke up, the medic, and I was like, hey, mate, I think I've got AIDS. And he goes, what do you mean you think you've got AIDS? What have you done? And I'm like, oh, so I've kind of slept with an African hooker with no condom. And he's like, mate, you have definitely got AIDS. So, oh, mate, yeah, rough as guts. So they put me on these prophylactics, whatever, and they stop the virus from getting into your blood somehow. Anyways, but they don't know if it works for a month. They can't tell. So for this whole month, I'm surrounded by Matlows, shit boss, thinking that I'm going to have to kill myself. I told my stripey on ship, I was like, mate, if this comes back positive, I'm going to float test myself off the side of this ship into the Atlantic. And he goes, yeah, mate, I don't blame you. I wouldn't want to be an AIDS victim either. Anyway, this whole month I thought, here we go. What am I going to write to my mum in my suicide note? It was a pretty low point. Anyways, you know, lo and behold, month goes past, test comes back negative, you know, and so to go celebrate, So that was one of the lowest points, followed by one of the best points in my career, I guess, realizing I didn't have AIDS. So to celebrate, we went whoring in Portugal just to top it all off. So yeah. Now, as far as best times in the Corps probably go, there was one time field firing, and I'm not going to try and show you that field firing is a good time. It is just dog shit. But it was summer, and it hadn't rained for 2 weeks in Sunnybridge, and somehow we hadn't been piss-wrapped once. It's like a miracle. Anyways, last day field firing, and we're waiting for it to get dark so we do this night attack. So we're sat on the side of this hill, and, you know, sun's going down, streaming over, hitting us on the hill. We're having a barbecue, a bunch of golfers, and you know, got the music cranking, that bootneck band playing. I don't remember the name. You know, lads giving each other heaps of shit, heaps of bands flying around. And I just looked around, I just realized that this is where I want to be. That every single bloke here is hoofing at his job, knows what he's doing, sound as shit, you know. This is what you join for. And just in that moment, I was like, I was happy to be where I was. I know I'd made the right decision to join the Corps. So that was really good. And then, well, probably another good memory we had. We were in Spain and training with the Yanks and the Spanish, you know, standard bootneck, flogged them both at everything. But, you know, it was winding down. There was a couple of days left there. We had nothing to do. So we're going out, hit the piss. Anyways, I lost my bank card, right? So I went to my mate. He wasn't going out that night because he was just too hungover from the night before. And I said to him, "Hey, mate, listen, I've lost my bank card. Can I borrow yours?" And he goes, "Yeah, mate, no worries. Just don't take the piss." And I'm like, "Yeah, of course not. Don't be stupid. Of course I won't take the piss." Anyways, lo and behold, took the piss. Was out there. I was on everything I'd get my hands on. And, oh, mate, ended up at some whorehouse with two hookers for 7 hours, sort of came to lying like half, mostly naked next to this officer's accommodation. So the Yanks found me just laying there on the grass, passed out. And then I had to tell my mate that I emptied his bank account on these two hookers the night before. I think it was like three thousand quid or something like that. So I spent all his money on these two hookers. And needless to say, he wasn't real happy with me. And I wasn't allowed to use his card ever again. But holy shit, it was a fun night. So yeah, that was a pretty decent memory. Anyways, lads, I'll leave you with that. Just thought I'd give you some of my best and worst times. Have a good one.
Mate, you got to love that accent, ain't ya? I mean, that was probably one of my favourites so far that I've read or heard. Pretty damn hilarious, and I don't think I need to add much more to that, mate. Everyone who knows who that is will know straight up who that is, because he's the exact same as he is in that speech as he is in person, and exactly as he is on his social medias. So, yeah, thanks for that one, Dan. Hilarious, Royal. So, good effort, mate. Thank you. Guys, if anyone has any questions or any follow-ups or any more detail about any of those, I'm so happy for you to just like any of these stories, reach out to me through the podcast, through my social media on the Working Title podcast, so twt.podcast on Instagram or Facebook, and I will contact that person that said that story and ask them if, you know, it's okay to share extra information or pass you on to them and that sort of thing. So give me a shout. Awesome. Next one, guys. Word for word from me. Highlight of my time in the Royal Marines was marching through Taunton after Herrick 12. It was pissing down with rain and my company was in full blues, but we didn't care. The crowd was 10 deep in places and the noise from them was something I'll never forget. Better than pass out, and felt like the town was mega behind the lads. I think that as a prof, guys, for those who did serve in that biggest capacity, you know, that's what the job's about. And to get some sort of recognition for the service that you did is just incredible. And good effort to that person. I'm glad he sort of shared that bit. And that's quite a poignant point, guys. So do remember that if you do join the Marines, there is the possibility you do that. And if the worst does happen, the worst happens. But if the best happens and you return, then you do get that sort of feeling afterwards. So I hear, obviously, as we know, I didn't get the opportunity. This same person, they're low. Low was when my branch liar, which is head of the branch sponsorship, decides who goes to which branch and whether they can be released or not. So, when my branch liar refused to release me to become a PTI despite me completing 6 months more than my 2-year return of service and giving me his word in writing that if I passed the PTI acquaint, he'd release me. The fat Renf cunt had zero integrity and let me do one of the most horrific weeks of my life knowing he was going to shaft me afterwards. So that's the end of the dick, guys. And let me break that one down a little bit for the guys that maybe aren't as attuned with the core yet as some of the others. So a branch liar is the branch sponsor, I think they're called, like the head of the branch that decides who gets pinged to go and who doesn't get pinged to go to that branch. So if they were the head of the drives branch, you know, they essentially get a bunch of names on a list of people that have been told they have to go and be a driver, and they decide whether they can leave or not. Now, the story is, or apparently the fact is, if you get pinged, if you do 18 months in that post, you get to go on to your choice of draft afterwards. They're called a branch liar because that's a complete and utter lie. So this is an example of that. Another one, PTI acquaint. So PTI is a personal training instructor, one of the toughest courses within the Royal Marines as a specialisation. And to get on it, you have to do an acquaint, which is essentially a week down at Limpston, getting absolutely your eyes bled out of your skull by the PTIs. And then the last one is fat ref Renf cunt. So Renf, guys, is spelt R-E-M-F, which stands for rear echelon motherfucker. So that is a derogative term for anyone that is not specialized in a front-facing role. So anyone that's based around the support staff rather than infantry. Anyway, guys, so that was read word for word as he requested, and then I just added a little bit more onto it. But I think that explains it as well as anyone could. On to the next recording.
Hello, Royal. So, I'm going to do my worst experiences and my best experiences of training first, and then I'll do my worst and best experiences in the Corps. So the worst experiences I had in training was that in about week 17, the training team, they made us chuck everything we owned literally down the centre console of the block. Literally everything, mattresses, everything excluding like beds and wardrobes, but everything went down there into a massive pile. The pile were about 10 foot tall, and we basically had all night to sort it out, which probably doesn't seem like a big task, but we had like, I don't know, 20 odd people's kit that had to be deciphered, and you'd find like a sock with your name on it, and then you'd have to wait another hour for a t-shirt that came out with your name on it, and it was just that kind of thing. And it was the worst thing they ever did to us at Limpston. It kept us up all night, and we had an inspection the following day at 10, and we only just got finished in time for that, and then we failed that again. And I mean, to the layperson, you have to appreciate that there's only a couple of washing machines on camp, and you had to then go and wash it all once you'd found all your kit. So there were lads fighting over washing machines, and you had to iron it. And that process of finding your kit, washing and ironing, just kept you up all night. And that was just an horrific time in training. Again, Dig X stands out straight away. We were on Salisbury Plain. It were minus whatever. It were absolutely horrendous. It were that cold that some of the lads got frostbite. You'd wake up in the morning with frost on your hair, and some lads even had it on their eyelashes. And we dug for 2 or 3 days with little entrenching tools, and it absolutely horrific experience. And you had to dig to get warm, but then when you stopped digging, you started getting cold and exposure instantly, so you couldn't really win. So it were 3 days of pure pure despair and just emotional depravity, really. And then after that, the Gasters, which you know too well, Royal, the Gasters. So it was just a bit of a soul destroying experience. Best experiences in training. Once we'd finished Final X at the fort, they got us into hushed us into this room, and it was pitch black. And when they turned the lights on, it were all Christmas lights. They put a Christmas tree in there, and there were mince pies and mulled wine. And it was, even though we were hanging out and we hadn't had a lot of sleep from Final X, and we were fatigued and knackered. I mean, I've put this in the book. That experience of them putting the Christmas lights on is the best Christmas experience I've ever had in my life, and it is to this day. And that were absolutely superb. And again, finishing the 30 miler, crossing that bridge were an unbelievable feeling. It were more a case of knowing that the nightmare, the living nightmare, was over. It wasn't so much that I'd passed it. It were kind of the disbelief that training had finished, the early mornings, the mess around, the beastings, the lack of comfort and convenience had finished, and I was kind of going on to pastures new. And I never thought I could do it. I never thought I could do training up until the commando test. You don't know whether you can do it. It's only until you cross that bridge on the 30 miler that you realise that you've actually made it. It's a very strange challenge is training, as you can attest to, my mate. Best and worst experiences in the Corps. So I went on FSRT, and we went to kind of the top of the pile for being on call and on deployment. And we got the call within a matter of days to go out to Iran when the lads got captured by the Iranians. At the time I was at a friend's engagement party. And I got the call there, and they were like, you've got 6 hours to get to work from Barnsley up to Scotland. They couldn't tell me why. I mean, in kind of a flapping sight, I wondered whether I'd failed a CDT, although I hadn't been doing anything, but your mind just works wonders on you. Just getting all the kit, getting prepped in Scotland, ready to go. We flew out on a BA flight with all the kit and the weapons out to Bahrain. And it was just an incredibly exciting experience. I thought we were 100% going to get the rounds down, and we were having these talks with agents on the way in, and it was just a great, great time, really exciting, exactly what you train for. And then we got there, and the Navy kind of put stoppers on it. The Navy's rationale, and I think the wider MOD's rationale, was if we get another team captured, we'd then become an international embarrassment, and they've captured two lots of Marines, so that they wouldn't let us board, they wouldn't let us do our job. There was so much red tape. The kit that we had were embarrassing. We had like drop leg holsters that had been masking taped up. We had old Beretta pistols. We had mini-me's that we didn't have the link for, and countless requests to get the link fell on deaf ears by the Navy. They wouldn't supply it. So we had key tactical weapons that we couldn't use. The boats that the Navy supplied were little ribs that, when you went up a wave, you came back down. It was absolutely embarrassing. And they called our call sign for each boat was Yogi and Boo Boo. And it was just the most embarrassing and soul destroying experience in my life, really, being a trained Marine. And I decided to leave. And as soon as I arrived back in the UK, I put my shit in and left. And that kind of, it killed the dream. Up until that point, I were uber keen. I wanted to go on and do other things, and that experience just kind of broke me, really, and I decided to leave.
Thank you for that one. That one was actually incredibly in depth, guys, and I think that one gives you a great perspective of both training and the Corps. So that was really, really valuable, and thank you very much for that. Made reference to the book again. That book's coming out soon. I will make sure I will publicise that on all of the working title, my own social media, guys. So, as I said before in the beginning, I'm not going to mention any names. If they did in the recording, then that's good to go. But I will be publicising that, so that book will be amazing, and it's coming out soon. So thank you very much for that one. Next one we're going to do, guys, will be me reading it out again. So Word for word, guys, and then if I need to, I'll add little bits on. I've been in the Royal Marines for just over 8 years now. I'd have to say my best moment personally have to be passing out as a commando medalist and receiving the Commandant's Prize on my JCC. The best times are definitely time spent with the lads. They make the job worthwhile. Worst moments. The past year has been a hard journey for me personally during my journey. All I ever wanted to do was go SF. I had to put it off on 2015 as I picked up and decided to go on my JCC instead. Then I went on selection. Having had a daughter 4 months prior to going on, my priorities had changed and I no longer had the desire I previously had. I ended up taking myself off the jungle phase, which I accept was personally the right decision for me and my family. However, I felt I no longer had any direction within the Royal Marines and was questioning whether or not to remain in. Another bad point for me is when you leave units behind, the best mates you made behind. It happens every 2 years and I hate the feeling of going to a new unit for the first few weeks. I'm always threaders. That one's a really good one, guys, because again, that was by someone that's still serving in the Royal Marines. So that gives you a good aspect of the variety of people that I was looking at. But also he's done quite a few years now and he's sort of experienced quite a few different things. JCC is the junior command course, so that's your corporal's course, just for people that don't know. And then SF is Special Forces. So early on he had admirations to go Special Forces, then life changed, you know, he had a daughter and he went on selection and it just wasn't the same and he decided to pull himself off. So, you know, that shows some real highs and lows, and obviously luckily he's decided that that was the best thing for him and he's made peace with that, and that's good and brilliant. And then he's also highlighted that, you know, one of the structures of the Royal Marines is that every 2 years you get a new draft. Some yours last a bit longer, some last a bit less, but every 2 years pretty much on average you move on. So you have to be prepared for that, guys, that you make incredible friendships, that a lot of them you stick with them, but a lot drift away as well, and you struggle to keep up with everyone. So every 2 years you do move on, and that's an interesting point. Awesome, thank you very much for that one. On to the next recording.
So hopefully you can hear me loud and clear and it's crisp, even though I'm using a laptop to do this. So some of the highs for me, I suppose, in the Corps were in my early days where, you know, when you first start and you still have that massive keenness to sort of serve and to explore the world and just do, I suppose, what you signed up to do. When I passed out, I think it was 2010 or 2011, I went to 40 Commando in Taunton. I think I was really fortunate because everyone I went through basic training with essentially went into Alpha Company, and also we was like, I suppose, a band of brothers. So we've just done basic training together and then we've gone straight into 40 Commando and gone into Alpha Company as well. All my close friends. So I suppose that was quite a big high in that regards. And then we were sort of gearing up for Herrick 17, which was like, say, in 2 years' time from that point, and that's why we all got drafted to 40 Commando. And you know, the highs of that were the pre-deployment training, the Black Alligator, going to Vegas with the lads, and just, you know, you just spent those 32 weeks with each other, and now you're going to do another like three to four years of each other, essentially. That was probably like some of the best highs and the best times, going out ashore with your Bezzy Oppos, obviously. And so that's the highs for me, was those first few years at a unit, being GD, you know, living your best life, should we say. And then going on tour. The lows for me were obviously coming back from that and sort of how you just get disbanded. You know, lads obviously get pinged doing things they don't want to do, which I understand because that's the natural process of the Corps. You've got to let the new lads come through and have their time to shine and live that dream. But it's just horrible. You get back from tour and there's pings waiting for lads, and the people that are by your side and who you're massively close to are getting shipped off to Scotland or wherever they've been drafted to, CTC. I suppose that's the low, because you've been with your best mates for like these 3 years and then you just all go in your separate ways, which is obviously, like I said, a natural part of the core. And yeah, that's probably the biggest low for me, and that's when I sort of lost interest. After Herrick 17, wasn't the most kinetic tour, a lot different to, I imagine, to the early Herricks that the core was involved in. But after that, that's when I sort of started shutting off and losing that lack of wanting to be in the core. I was never a lifer in the core. I wanted to sort of get in, do my bit, and then get out. And yeah, and that's the lows for me. What was quite interesting for me, I actually served as the core RSM's driver towards my last bit. And that was a really insightful way to see the core and actually how hard it is for certain things to happen in the core. So I went from a grav at a unit who was dripping and being in sort of that element to then going into seeing like how the hierarchy works and actually how hard it is for people. You know, we drip about things all the time, but actually there's a lot of moving parts behind the scenes to make that work. And so it was really insightful into the core. And the core RSM, who was Phil Gilby, hands down probably one of the most professional blokes I've ever seen in the core, who took his job to the extreme, and he definitely dug out for the lads and did all he could to, you know, to make the core what it is today, I suppose. So there's my highs and lows. Essentially, the high bit being with the lads all that time, going out, just doing everything together, going on tour together, doing all those things, and then coming back and just being disbanded, which I imagine is a similar story to most people's.
Thank you very much for that, Royal. Waz, that was quite an interesting little different take on it, guys, especially when it comes into being the RSM's driver, and that's a pretty decent one. But I hope you can see some of the common themes starting to appear here now, so that you're starting to get a good picture of the highs and lows. Moving on to the next one, another one read out by me. I think the first real high for passing was passing out of training. After all the hard work during training and setbacks from being backtrooped and not getting to finish as an original, once I realised that the goal was to get through training and move on to life in the core, not be an original, I put that behind me and carried on trying to achieve my main goal in life up to that point. Lots of guys for some reason let things like this overwhelm them and they end up quitting. Some come back in a few months or even a few years because they know it is what they want. And those that do quit, I think, no, it was never really for them. Otherwise, they would have found a way to get past it and finish training. A big low for me initially passing out of training was realising the day-to-day job in the core wasn't like my training team had made it out to be. I'd gone through training while 40 Commando won their last tour of Afghan, and my team had all came through the core during the Herrick campaign. Coming into the core just after this all ended was a bit of an anti-climax initially. All of my peers felt the same, as we all wanted to get out away as soon as we could. All I wanted, like I said, was to get away and gain some experience as soon as I could. So when I put my preferences in, at the end of training I chose my first one as 4-3 Commando, purely because S Squadron was there at the time and they were deploying on counter-piracy operations. So I made my mind up that that was what I was going to aim for. I worked hard for it, and after 18 months I managed to get in. And whilst I was on the boarding course, I managed to get on an S-Triple-T, which is a short-term training team with PJ, which is me, where I was given a lot of responsibility to plan and carry out training with a foreign force. This was a big high for me, as I was my first time away that wasn't a training exercise, and I loved it. That led to a 9-month counter-narcotic deployment on ship, followed by another S-Triple-T to Africa. My 2.5 years in S Squadron was a serious highlight of my career, and all the experience I gained from it and all the travelling I got to do, I went all over the world to places you would never get an opportunity to go to. After that, I hit a bit of a dip, as I had no idea what SQ, so specialisation, I wanted, and my time in an squadron was coming to an end. I had been asking for a certain draft for ages, but had been told it wasn't a possibility. There was a real chance I was going to get pinged for a job I didn't want or end up in some kind of admin job as a GD Marine. That is a possibility for anyone, and you need to be proactive in your career to get what you want. And even then, the Corps only takes you your preferences sometimes. You have to realise that you are just a Marine, that they need to fill a position, and it may not be the one that you want. Luckily, I managed to get a draft I really wanted, and I managed to achieve everything I wanted to from start. Wanted to from the start of my career. So that's quite a decent one. Again, guys, I know I say that every time, but that gives an interesting take to it, you know, to the whole post-Herrick era. That sort of attitude was shared by a lot. Then the pings were happening. Lots of trips were like cancelled or not as many going on. So this person did what he can to push his career in the way that he wanted. And that is very important when you join the Corps, guys. Like, a lot of people will tell you, you can't do this until here, or you have to do this first. And it's just a case of you've got to be headstrong, and you've got to be cheeky. And I think some of the other guys make reference to it in terms of getting on the drafts they want. They literally just turned up on the day and jumped in, and stuff like that. And especially if you listen to Glenn, my last podcast, he was saying that some people to get on courses would just turn up and hope for the best. So you've really got to drive your own career in the Corps, as well as accept that you are just a number at the end of the day, guys. So, yeah, all part of it. Okay, guys, so I think this is a good time to actually end this part of the podcast. So I didn't actually overall intend to do two parts. I was hoping to get this all into one part, which is why at the beginning I made no reference to a two-parter. But I was overwhelmed and very humbled by the fact that I had so much response from the bootneck community and all the ex-royals out there. So I got a lot more content than I thought. So I thought better to split it into two around 45-50 minutes than it is to try and ram them all in like some massive hour and a half, 2 hour podcast. So I'm going to end this one, guys, and make sure you catch up for the rest of the stories. I believe the next one will start with a Gopping Scouse accent, so make sure you catch up for that one, guys. Before I do sign off for this one, thank you very much for everyone that has sent one in for this half of the podcast. I hope that everyone out there got a lot from this half, and hope to see you all in the next half. If you've got any feedback or anything like that, any questions or anything about anyone that has come up, give me a message on my social media, twt.podcast, or on Instagram, or puj_Harries, HARRIES, on Instagram as well. Cheers, guys. Catch you in part two.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Working Title, a podcast hosted by PJ Harries. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day.